Hi, Anne. Welcome to my podcast. I shouldn't say this, but on this week's episode, I am joined by a very interesting guest, Hector Hughes. Hector is co-founder of a fascinating business, Unplugged. I'm sure he'll explain more in detail, but the concept behind Unplugged is focused entirely around digital detoxes at cabins in the countryside that allow you to fall completely off the grid. No phones, no screens, no social media. So many of us spend hours upon hours staring at our screens to the point where it's bordering on addiction. And I thought it'd be great to chat to Hector about what led him to start Unplugged, how he thinks screen time is impacting our lives, and how it is impacted his. In this episode, we talk about what prompted Hector to do a 2-week silent retreat in the Himalayas, how that helped him with the idea for his business, Unplugged, the realization that quality relationships are more important than quantity, how we can promote more Unplugged workplace culture, and the best Zoom tip I have heard in the last 12 months. So without further ado, sit back, relax, and enjoy this episode of I Shouldn't Say This But. Welcome to the podcast. Thank you so much for joining me. I can't wait to talk to you about what Unplugged is and just a little bit more about it and how we can all be better if we go on a detox of our digital screens. So thank you.
So lovely to be here. So thank you very much for having me.
Can you tell us a little bit about Unplugged and what exactly it is?
Yeah, absolutely. So we launched last July, just after lockdown one, and basically the goal with Unplugged is to help people unplug from their digitally dependent lives. So we do this by providing a digital detox at cabins in the countryside around initially London, but we hope to expand across the UK. So basically what it is, we've got these cabins in the countryside, people come for a 3-night digital detox, and when they arrive, they literally padlock their phones in a box. We give them a map and a Nokia and leave them to it for 3 nights.
Where did the concept come from?
So myself and my co-founder actually worked together for a tech startup in London. And in 2019, I just got a bit kind of burnt out with it all. And on the recommendation of a friend, I went to a silent retreat in the Himalayas in northern India. And very cliche, I came back from that and quit my job a week later. And I'd heard about these cabin startups in other countries. So there's quite a big ecosystem in the US and Australia. And I've been thinking for a while about how I could be spending more time offline. And I had a drink with my now co-founder, Ben, and he's the kind of guy who, you know, loves his tech and devices and racks up 7 hours a day screen time. And I think what we kind of discussed is just how inaccessible these, you know, silent retreats, meditation, there's still a lot of stigma around these things. So it's quite hard for people to get started. So the idea really came from that. It's about how can we actually make something that is, you know, is easily accessible for people, and, you know, people can just get on board with and go and try out. So that's where it came from. And yeah, it's been a good ride since.
Amazing. So how's it been then since you launched last June, July?
Yeah, it's been a lot of fun. Like we got really lucky in many ways with the timing, because although we're basically a travel company during a pandemic, actually, this has accelerated so many of the trends that we see and that we're trying to tap into, which is, you know, now our more, even more of our life has kind of moved online now. So it's more important than ever to carve out that time to, you know, to kind of reconnect with ourselves. So in that sense, it's been, you know, fantastic, and we've had amazing reviews. And then I've just really enjoyed the kind of launch of the business, and you know, working with Ben, my co-founder, we get on very well, so we've had a lot of fun. And yeah, just met a lot of wonderful people along the way, so very grateful for the last 8 months or so.
Amazing. Before we get a little bit more into like that sort of digital detox side of things, I want to know about the silent retreat. So what was it then that really sparked you to say, right, I've had enough, I'm done, I'm going to go and do a silent retreat in the Himalayas? And then what happened, and how long did you have to be quiet for?
So I have to give a lot of credit to one of my friends who's also called Hector, funnily enough. And he did it earlier in the year and saw that I was a bit, yeah, I think I was just kind of very dissatisfied with everything. So I was, you know, working for this tech startup, and we were opening offices in the US and Australia. So it was lots of flying around the world. And then outside of that, kind of fairly busy socially. So it was a lot of, you know, heavy Thursday and Fridays, and then feeling crap on Monday and Tuesdays. And like, it just started to wear me down, I think. And, you know, he saw that and recommended this thing that, that he'd done in the Himalayas. And initially I just kind of laughed it off because, you know, in my head I was thinking, I can't do a silent retreat. You know, what would people think? What would the team at work think? All that kind of thing. And then, you know, things got busier and busier, and I just finally was like, you know what, may as well go and try this. So I got there, and it's the most spectacular. It's this kind of Buddhist temple or meditation center on top of a mountain, kind of tucked away in a bit of forest. It's just above where the Dalai Lama lives. And, you know, there are kind of monkeys jumping around in the trees. And you get there, you hand in your phone, and the first day or so, and we've actually found this when people have come to stay with us as well, the first day or so you're actually a bit more agitated because you kind of feel a bit like, you know, something's missing, like you're almost missing a limb. So I was kind of keeping a journal while I was there, and, you know, I really battle it now, like I'm pretty miserable for the first day or so, and kind of in the lead up to the trip. And then, you know, my mood just rockets throughout the experience. It was definitely a roller coaster while I was there, so you definitely have some real kind of lows, but then, yeah, the highs are just kind of euphoric. Yeah, it's really, really remarkable. And it's basically half meditation, half Buddhist philosophy. So I'm not, and you know, never have been religious, but, you know, the Buddhists do talk a lot of sense. It really changed my perspective on religion, because I'd always thought it was just a kind of a bug of society, right? Like something that was broken and caused all these problems. But actually what religion does is it helps people live a good life. You know, it gives you the meaning and the tools around kind of connecting with your family and all these crazes that we're seeing coming out of Silicon Valley now, you know, fasting, meditation, all these things. Religion figured out 5,000 years ago. So that was really interesting. And then, yeah, and then the last 2 days were just solid meditations. You did kind of 5-6 hours a day meditating. And honestly, I just came out of that just buzzing. Like it was, yeah, haven't felt anything quite like it. And you know, you get your phone back after that and you just don't want to check it. It feels almost abrasive, you know, to kind of log back on. And yeah, so it was very kind of empowering in that sense, is, you know, you really felt kind of in control of myself for the first time in a long time.
Had you ever done anything like that before? Had you done like yoga and meditation and like dipping into it?
I had been dipping into meditation. I think that's the thing, is like it's a gradual process. It's also not like an up and to the right, which is what a lot of people think, is you start with one of these things and that's just easy all the way. So I think when people hear these kind of stories, and like, you know, I always hear stories like this and it sounds very unattainable, but actually like it's just kind of, it's a gradual process. And I'd like, you know, I started doing Headspace probably the year before, because I just kept hearing how good meditation was. And, you know, Headspace has some really nice, just like 10 minutes a day. And I like did that, and 1 month was good. And then the next month I'd kind of fall off it a bit. And so I was like playing around with it for 8 or 9 months. And then I was like, okay, look, I really need to crack meditation. And I just kept hearing, you know, all these, you know, celebrities talking about transcendental meditation. I thought, you know, these guys are probably the busiest people on earth. So if it works for them, it's worth a try. And so I did that, the transcendental meditation course in July of 2019. So a couple of months before I went on the silent retreat. And that just stuck like glue for me, you know, for whatever reason. So that's 20 minutes twice a day. And that's been really, really life-changing since. So I was already quite well equipped in that regard, and that definitely helped, but it still wasn't easy, which shows like how tough it is to kind of make these jumps. But then they seem so obvious in hindsight. But I remember just how much I was like questioning myself pre-trip, like I can't do this, and all these kind of things. But then in hindsight, it just seems like the most obvious thing in the world.
It's funny, isn't it, what it's done to us, having access to things straight away at your fingertips, and you do get addicted to it. I watched The Social Network and it was that, and I was like, yep, no, I can see how this becomes an addiction, because I'd notice it myself. And sometimes I've even had it where I feel like I've got the vibration, like, but my phone's always on silent, so it can't be. But then I'm like, ooh, has it gone off? It is really bad, really bad. How long did you have to be? So it's the silent bit that I'm interested in. Because meditation is amazing. I know there's like loads of things around the fact that meditation can help you be happier, more content, more creative, sleep better. There's so much around meditation. And I love that sort of stuff. Not been brave enough to do anything like this because I'm scared of being silent. Because I'm living on my own. I've been living on my own for 12 months now. But I still talk to myself. I make noises. So how did you find that bit?
Yeah, it was really interesting, actually. So it wasn't like, there are some of these, there's like Vipassana silent retreats where you're like 10 days complete silence, sitting like a flagpole for 8 hours a day. Like, this had 1 hour a day of discussion where you were like, pose some Buddhist questions that you had to kind of debate. So that was a bit of an outlet. But the rest of the time was silent. And what was really interesting is like the connection that you develop with the other people on the course. Because like, even though you're not talking to them, there's just something about that, like, you know, nonverbal, just literally like just through your kind of eyes, like over 10 days, you develop real kind of real friendships, which is very strange. So that was really interesting. It was quite kind of eye opening to see that other perspective that, you know, we don't need to be talking all the time. But yeah, I think it's a powerful, like, part of the process.
I think you've identified something though with Unplugged and the fact that it just seemed that little bit of a step too far. I think for me, like, going all that way and then being in a place that you're not familiar with, at least with your concept, you there's some more familiarity around it. But I think more so now, we're also aware of how much screen time we've had. I got my message this morning that said my screen time was up 15% on last week. And you're like, ah, no. And I was looking at how much I've been on my phone. It was like 8 hours a day. And I'm like, I don't need to be on 8 hours a day. It's ridiculous. Even if my work is, majority of it is online, it's a lot of time when you start to think about it. So have you done a stay in the cabin?
Yes, I have. I luckily got one of the kind of 30 degree August weekends or September weekends. So it was wonderful, actually. It was all the kind of the wheat fields were being cut as I was there. So it was really quite picturesque. But interestingly, when I just went and did it on my own, and the kind of insights that I came out with, or you know, what kind of came up while I was there, was the importance of relationships and, you know, how, you know, because again, I've spent the last, since that silent retreat, I've spent so much of my time trying to, you know, find solitude and get headspace and all these kind of things. But then, you know, what I kind of come into terms with is that, you know, a life well lived is really about the quality of your relationships. I think quality is also the important word there, because I think, you know, now in this, the age of social media, you know, the quantity is rather extreme. And, you know, it means that we are less proactive with the people we really care about, and, you know, and we can't be. And I think I've definitely always been a yes man and, you know, speaking to everyone and all this kind of stuff. And, you know, the conclusion I came to during my digital detox was that, you know, I probably do need to be more proactive with the kind of people I really care about. And so that was a surprising and interesting insight.
It's so interesting. You're right, though, because social, you're right, it's quantity over quality. But you see it when you're out. So I remember when we could go out and when we were in restaurants, you could just see couples not talking to each other, just sat on their phone. And I'm like, I don't want to be like that. If I go out, I want to be having a chat and I want to be doing stuff. But you can see it a lot that instead of having a conversation with that person right in front of them, they're trying to create content to engage however many followers they've got that they don't really care about. And I do think that's a problem in society, is that we're using social in the wrong way personally, but that's my own opinion. So what happens in the cabin? So you go, do you want to tell me a little bit about what happens when you get there?
Yeah, for sure. So the idea is it's kind of self-contained. So you have, you know, everything you need for your 3-day stay. So they're off-grid, solar paneled. We've got kind of, you know, maps of the local area, you know, bathroom, shower, kitchen, all these kind of things, and a fire pit outside and a wood-burning stove. And that's it, really. And I think what we, there are some board games in there, actually. But one of the things that we were really worried about is, you know, what are people going to do? Are they going to be bored? And actually, you know, people are remarkably resourceful. I think them getting lost was another big concern, but, you know, no one's got lost yet. And, you know, people just, you know, really, they read, they kind of talk, they cook, they walk, you know, it's it's very simple. And so that's been great to see, and very eye-opening. But they walk a lot. You know, there's, I think some people are walking kind of 20 miles a day and, you know, doing tours of all the local pubs. So that's been great to see.
And you've got things like cassette players in there, haven't you, and books for people to use. So there is things that you can do just to, so it's not like complete silence and you're in a box and you can't leave.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And I think we'll definitely play around with those as well. So we have a cassette player and books, as you say. And like, I think we're pretty interested in looking at like what else we can introduce in the future. And like, do people want to go more down the experience side of things? Like, is there some kind of stuff to make or do when you're in there? So I think that's all to come and exciting.
And what do you do when people leave? Is there anything in place for people who've been on the retreat? Do you get put straight back into your normal life, or do you have advice? Do you, like, what's the aftercare?
We send you some tips, sadly, online about how you can kind of manage your relationship back in the real world. But I think that's something to really build out. So for the first 6 months, we were actually checking people out. So then it's quite easy because you're talking to people and you can kind of, you know, suggest that they can get back to London without checking their phones and then ease themselves back into it. So I think over the last lockdown, we've transitioned to someone else cleaning the cabin. We were, myself and Ben, were cleaning it for the first 6 months. And, you know, now we've got a couple more, we've got three more cabins on the way in the next couple of months. So, yeah, we need to solve, you know, cleaning and all these kind of things. I think one of the big things there is, you know, what do people take away? And I think our whole focus is to create more of an experience than a accommodation, right? Like, it's not just, hey, come stay in a cabin for 2 days, which is also great, actually. I think, you know, I think that's also a lovely thing to do, just getting out into nature. But I think from the moment they arrive, or from even pre-trip to, you know, a month after, we really want to kind of take people on that journey. And I think already, even though we probably haven't got as much as we should in place, we're getting some wonderful feedback. And, you know, we get guests kind of telling us a month later that actually 1 week a month, this was pre-lockdown, they would go to a restaurant and both leave their phones at home. It's just like that kind of thing. And I think that's a lot of the magic, because like, we, you know, before we launched this, some people were saying, yeah, but, you know, 3-day digital detox doesn't work because you can't change people's habits in 3 days. And it's like, well, that's fine. That's also true. But I think the real value comes from changing people's perceptions. And like, it gets people thinking about it. And I think what's been really great is we've managed to change people's perceptions when they haven't even come to stay. So just having these conversations, you know, speaking to you today and you know, whoever might listen to this, it just gets people thinking. And I think that's really the first step. And, you know, as you said earlier, I think we're so unaware usually of just how addicted we are to our phones. And I think starting to develop that self-awareness is really the first step to, you know, to kind of reclaiming our attention, because it's crazy, like 8 hours, and 8 hours a day is a lot of time, you know, of course. But they do enable so much, you know, and so much is possible because of technology. But it really is just finding, you know, where that balance is and how we can have the best of both worlds.
Nice. I like that, leaving your phone. I've done it when I've been on, it was the middle of lockdown, and I took a week or a few days off, and I went out, it was when we could travel, so I went to Formby Beach near Liverpool, and I left my phone in the car, and I was like, I don't want it near me for however long I'm out, I don't want it near me, because it's just, especially when you've got it on your watch as well, and it's like constantly just like, you've got a message. And I just think, I don't want anyone to talk to me for a little while. So I just left it in the car. And you know what? It was liberating. It was lovely just to know that actually, no, the world hasn't burnt down. Everything's fine. Social chain still exists. It's not broken. And it's okay for like a few days or a few hours or whatever. So it's nice. I think it'd be good to get from you some tips on overworking and burnout, if that's all right, because I think this is all very much interlinked. And there was a post that I've put out a couple of times now that's gone absolutely viral. It's crazy. And I think it's something that people have really tapped into, is that feeling of fatigue now and feeling like they've overworked and they've burnt out, and we're on screen so much, Zoom fatigue is very much real. So what can people do to prevent screen burnout?
Well, I have one amazing tip that I got last week and has literally changed my life. So hide the view of yourself on Zoom, because Zoom fatigue actually comes from looking at yourself. And like, it's tiring for us to look at ourselves in the mirror. And so just by hiding your self-view, that will make a huge difference. In terms of actioning that for people, if you just like hover over yourself, the three dots, then there's a hide self-view option. The other thing is really just like creating pockets of space, because I think what happens now is like the days are just one big constant blur. So like most of us, you know, are straight on our phones as soon as we wake up or within 10 minutes of waking up. And then, you know, you've then just lost your attention for really the whole day, because we never, like you say, when you left your phone in the car, like you then kind of liberate your mind, right? But it's like most of us spend the whole day just kind of shackled to our phone. And it's like I've thankfully in the last year or so got into some very good habits around like, you know, spending a few hours in the morning before I turn on my devices. And like, I really notice the days when I check email like earlier, like that day, my attention is just so scrambled compared to the other days. I think attention management is the key, because I think there's been so much talk of time management. It's like, yeah, well, you know, this is how much time we're spending there, but it's really about where is your attention. And the problem, or one of the problems we're faced by technology, is that, you know, our attention is pulled in 50 different places. Like when I'm on my emails, you know, I've got WhatsApp open over here, and there's, you know, maybe LinkedIn over there, and you know, you're just juggling 10 different things at once, and it's exhausting. So the more, you know, people can kind of focus on one thing, just pull yourself away, you know, grab a pen and paper every now and again. Just get away from your devices. Just go and sit down for 10 minutes and just have a scribble. Just, you know, talk to yourself like, how am I doing? So whatever it is, like whether your thing is, you know, walking, writing, whatever it is, but it's just about kind of even for 10 minutes, just breaking that bond with technology and just crafting out some space for yourself.
It's so true. It isn't time management. It is attention management. And it's important, I think, for organisations to try and promote a more unplugged workplace culture. How do you think the leaders that are listening on this call and the managers can promote that within their own organisations?
Yeah, for sure. So I think, you know, it really, really does come from the top. And it's like, if the leader is emailing people on a Sunday night, then, you know, the people are going to feel like they need to be online on a Sunday night, right? So it's really about, I guess, just empathizing with people and just helping carve out time for them, right? And, you know, encouraging it. Like one of my favorite stories is Stuart Butterfield, the CEO of Slack, makes everyone get off Slack at 5 o'clock or 6 o'clock or whatever. So the whole office goes at six. I think that's just such a great example of good management, right? And it's like setting those boundaries, because, you know, like in an organization, people really do take they kind of take habits from the top. And so I think it's really highlighting to people what's important and why it's important, but then it's also kind of, you know, practicing what you preach as well. I think
I live by treat people like you want to be treated. I don't want to get emails on a Sunday night. It stresses me out, so I don't send them. There's an amazing thing on emails that you can do, which is called schedule send. So if you've got a thing on your head that you know you've got to get off your head because you won't sleep that Sunday night, schedule send it for the Monday morning. It's the best thing ever, because you can then sleep and you're not interrupting someone else's weekend.
I also am in love with that feature. And the other great thing you can do with that is, like, because, you know, there's so many email conversations where people are just replying straight away. And it's like, sometimes you don't need that. So you, even if you're on a Tuesday, you could just schedule send for Wednesday, and then it's off your plate, but it kind of, you know, slows down the conversation. You know, some things need to be sorted, but some things, they just, you know, because that person is then, if you're then replying straight away, that they're going to be kind of sucked into it, right? And so I think, treating emails more like letters. I wish we could go back to writing letters, because there's something so, you know, wonderful about just having kind of two or three days to, you know, wait and think about responses. And I think there's just this kind of instant gratification culture is it's rewriting our brain, I think. So I think the more we can slow down, the better.
But how do you switch off now? Because they're great tips for culture. What do you do? What are your tips for people?
I think, you know, just spending time with yourself is really important and really helps. So, you know, I love reading. My television's been broken for a year or doesn't work. I haven't figured it out. So I've just been reading for the lockdown, which is, you know, I really get a lot of energy and a lot of that really kind of resets me. And going for walks as well, like just going for an hour's walk is actually kind of magical. Like the kind of, you know, ideas that spark off that are really fantastic. But I think, you know, whatever it is, and like also, you know, seeing friends and family, obviously harder in the last year, but there are all these things. But what I found really helpful is to do it without my phone. And I think it's because like your phone comes with all the things that are happening on it, right? It comes with, you know, the conversations from work. It comes with, you know, all the WhatsApps that you need to reply to. And so actually, if you are going to go and have dinner with friends, or you're going to go for a walk, or, you know, whatever it is, just being away from the phone just kind of gives you, just help, allows you to be present, I think. I think that's what's so hard nowadays, because they are, you know, super addictive. It's crazy. You know, some days I'm just can't get myself off my laptop or phone. So it's, you know, actually, you know, in The Social Dilemma, they have that kind of cookie jar with a timer on top. So I have one of those in my kitchen, and every night at 6 p.m., I'll put my phone in there and set it for like, you know, 15 hours or something. And then I just can't get it until like 9 a.m. the next day. And that's so great. Like when I remember to do that's super liberating. So I think, you know, it's just kind of refinding, you know, what it is that you love doing offline. So, you know, for some people it's drawing, it's playing board games, you know, whatever it is. But like, yeah, I think kind of refind your inner child.
I think connections as well, as soon as we're allowed to. I think that is a good thing for everyone to take out of it. Like, don't rush straight back into your old habits as soon as we can go and see people, because you've missed it, that sort of social interaction with your friends. The only thing you've been able to do is do it over video call. So don't rush out and then sit on your phone while you're at dinner. I'm going to be watching people. I'm going to be judging. Do you think there's a long-term solution to people being so stuck in online activity?
I do. I'm an optimist by nature, so I'm sure we're in for a brighter future. And I think it's like, what's interesting is we're having this conversation, right? Like, you know, the messages you're spreading with your platform, and, you know, it's starting to get into society. And I think that's how change happens. Like, it's not going to be easy. I think it's going to need to come from everyone. Like, I feel like, you know, there's a lot of whose fault is it now? When, you know, actually it's no one's fault, and, you know, no one's to blame. It's also, I think we also kind of beat ourselves up because we're really addicted to, you know, Netflix or our phones or whatever it is. But it's tricky. Like, you know, we have just gone through this crazy, crazy, crazy growth as a species, you know, this technological advancement. And, you know, as I'm sure you know, at Social Chain, when things really accelerate, stuff breaks, you know. And so we have all these faults with society and all these imperfections. But I'm a big believer in, you know, the ingenuity of humanity. So I think we'll figure it out.
Well, I'm going to touch on something now that's probably something that we all blame from time to time for making us feel like this, which is social media. Why do you think people are craving phone-free experiences?
Yeah, so social media is an interesting one. I think it's just this, you know, 10, 12 year social experiment that we're only now seeing the results of. And, you know, you're seeing teenagers who've grown up with social media, and you know, there are skyrocketing anxiety, mental health issues. And I think that why that is, I think, first of all, I do think it's a problem. And I think it's something that needs addressing. And again, I think awareness is a big part of that. But I think it's because we as humans haven't actually changed much since 50,000 years ago when we were living as hunter-gatherers. But we're living in this, you know, crazy, crazy, crazy world of 2021. And so we're designed to live in little groups of 150 people, and you know everyone in the tribe, and, you know, you spend your days walking through the forests and, you know, picking berries. But we're now living in this world where suddenly we're communicating with, you know, thousands and thousands of people every day. And we're just not built for that, you know. We're not built for that many relationships. We're not built for, you know, comparison with that many people. And I think, you know, social media just has this feature that it's people showing their best lives. And so it's just a constant reminder of all our own inadequacies, right? Like, I'm actually off Facebook and Instagram and Twitter, and I went off. So LinkedIn for a while, I gave my little sister my login details. And then anytime I wanted to log in, I had to do a Zoom call with her, and we would check messages and so on. But I'm back on LinkedIn now. And, you know, I do feel a bit worse when I'm on it, right? Like when I scroll through the newsfeed, like I feel a bit anxious. And I think it's because, you know, our brain just can't deal with like, all these other people doing all these other things. And yeah, there is a real feeling of, you know, inadequacy, imposter syndrome, all these things. So I think it's something, you know, that we need to be very aware of. And I think that it's something that, you know, does need addressing in the coming years.
It was interesting because I saw something and it said about you're in control of your own social media use. And it's so true. The thing about social is it can be an absolutely amazing tool. And one of the trends that we're seeing now is a lot more of this thought leadership, mental health support, that. But you curate your feed. And I think people forget that, in that, especially on Instagram and Facebook and TikTok, the algorithm serves you things that you've interacted with. So if you're curating your feed, you've got to be very mindful about it. But if you're creating your feed in positive ways, you'll get a lot out of it. If you're curating it in a negative way or a comparative way, you're going to see more of that. And it's just going to spiral. And I think for me, that's where there needs to be a lot better education of young people on what the benefits of social are versus that all-consuming comparison culture that we've got now. And I thought, I do think it's changing slightly personally. What do you see for the future of social media? Do you think people will continue to use it at the rate that it is, or do you think people will start switching off from it like you have?
It's interesting. I don't know is the easy answer for that. That's a really interesting point that you just raised. I think, yeah, because the trouble I see, and not to beat the hunter-gatherer analogy to death, but the you know, we do as a species have this kind of negative bias, and you know, it's what kept us alive from lions 50,000 years ago. Because you know, I think that is, and that's where you see this real polarization on Twitter and, you know, the news and all these things. And so I think there's a little bit of us that likes that, like we seek that out, right? So I think I just don't know what the answer is with social media and how it works in a way that's not, you know, so kind of disempowering, because I think that there are just these wonderful features of it. But I think we'll figure it out. I think there's a lot of smarter people than me working on this problem. And I think, you know, exactly like what you just said around curating the feed, it's just like really understanding. And I think it's about really exposing the issue and really just having a honest and intelligent conversation around it. And I think insights like that are what is going to change it. Because I do think, I'm sure that there is a good solution, you know, a solution where we can control. Because the other thing, playing devil's advocate against myself a little bit, is like, this happened with every new technology. There was this kind of backlash, and it was like, you know, whatever, newspapers have ruined our society, like all those kind of things. So it is just the next evolution of that, right? So we will adapt. I think, you know, we'll change. And I think, again, will we change for the better? I'm not sure. Is everyone going to go to the extent that I've gone to? Probably not. I think I'm probably fairly extreme in that regard. But again, kind of like what we're doing with Unplugged, like, you know, actually it's just about getting that headspace. You know, you can do that for 10 minutes each day, you know, getting out in nature, like all these kind of things. So I do think there is a way to get that, you know, to the wider society. And I think that's kind of what we're just trying to learn with Unplugged, because, you know, again, going and spending three nights at a cabin is quite a kind of aspirational thing, and it's not that attainable for everyone, right? There's a price that comes with it, and you know, some people it's too much money. And so it's really, can we take the learnings from that you know, we can then help spread to the wider society? So I think what's really interesting is this question, like, why are we doing this? Why are we running this business? I just really want to, you know, understand this question, like what does the future look like? Because, you know, I don't know if you've seen Wall-E, the Pixar film, where the space robots, and all the humans in that film are massively overweight, they're on wheelchairs, and they're like staring into their screens. And that's the trend, you know. If you look around on the tube nowadays in London, everyone's just face down into Netflix. And, you know, they say the kind of best way to predict the future is to build it. And so I think it's like, what's the alternative, right? I think that's kind of what we're trying to do here, is like, because I see us as competing with, you know, Netflix and Instagram and all these things. And it's like, you know, what can we do to you know, give people another option, right? And I think that's it. I think it's about how do you really create something better than, you know, binge watching Netflix for 10 hours or whatever it is. So yeah, I'm sure we will find a solution in social media. You know, it's obviously here to stay. So I'm sure, you know, we will figure out how it fits in society.
I don't think it's just your, like, our responsibility either. I think the platforms have got a responsibility. I mean, our phones enable us to do it. So you say you put your phone in the cookie jar and, like, lock it in. I've got something now on my phone where I can't touch my apps after 9 o'clock. And I found that as a massive benefit. And I think, to be honest, this year, it's been very hard for everyone. But I think when people come out of it, they're going to be looking for these experiences over living digitally like they have done for the last 12 months. So I can't wait to see where it takes you. I really, really can't wait to see the knowledge that you get out of it as well. And I think that's amazing that you're going to use that. Have you got any last tips for anyone who now might want to take a little bit of time off their screens? I think the one about removing yourself from Zoom fatigue is absolutely incredible. So if you've got anything else that you want to share with people before we do the admission submission, that would be great.
Yeah, for sure. So I think actual like physical distance is key. So like putting it in another room, and also just like, you know, kind of removing the reasons to be on your phone. So like two of the best purchases I've ever made are this watch for £20 and the alarm clock for £15, because it means I don't need to take my phone into my bedroom. And it also means that anytime I check the time, I have a watch rather than my phone. And it's like, the problem is we just use our phones for everything nowadays. And if you go onto your phone to check your time and then you see that you've got a message and you go and check the message and, you know, next thing you know, it's an hour later. So it's just about removing the excuses to do it, right? Because I think, you know, the last message on that is just not to beat yourself up about it, right? Because it's hard, you know, we all struggle with it. Just kind of celebrate the small wins and, you know, start small.
So just to round this amazing chat off, I've got so much out of this, so I'm hoping that everyone else will as well. But the podcast is called I Shouldn't Say This But, because in each episode I open up with honesty and talk about subjects that someone in my role as an MD probably would usually avoid, things like anxiety, imposter syndrome, fear of failure. So please, would you mind ending this podcast with an admission of something you probably shouldn't say, whether that's about your struggles you faced in your career, a secret about lockdown or your own personal demons, or something that you'd like to change about yourself. So Hector, I'm going to pass over to you. I shouldn't say this, but
I... 3 or 4 weeks ago started seeing a psychosexual therapist about my lifelong aversion to relationships, which I think is rooted around just a kind of avoidance and anxiety around sex. Yeah, that's been my journey for the last 4 or 5 weeks. And yeah, it's already learning a lot about that and unpacking a lot of kind of childhood stuff, and feel like I'm regaining control of that part of my brain. So I didn't think I'd be talking about that today, but
credit to you. That's a very big admission. And then therapy is something that is tough to get started in. So well done for doing it. And I've my therapy journey with Karen, who is now our podcast therapist, has been absolutely incredible for me. So hopefully you'll find the benefits as well. But thank you so much. That was amazing.
No, it was so good to chat, honestly. Thank you so much. Thank you for having me.
It's been wonderful to talk to Hector and to hear all about Unplugged and this fascinating story and the journey that he's been on. I know I'll definitely be reconsidering my screen time from now on. I'm going to be taking these tips, and even on this Zoom call, I have turned my face off so I can't see myself. So Zoom fatigue will be no more. Next week, we'll be back with Karen for another great episode, and I look forward to speaking to you then. Have a great week, everyone.